Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So the first topic that I wanted to discuss today on my Attention Please podcast is the alleged data breach of personal data of pretty much every Indian citizen. Again, alleged, and I absolutely trust the government that nothing wrong happened. No, nothing. There was no data leak at all. We'll come to deconstructing what the government said. But for those of you who haven't been reading the news, and this news item didn't get as much play as you would think it should when the private data of Indian citizens is essentially available on Telegram. And for those of you who don't understand the importance of this, the kind of data that's available, which is essentially personally identifiable data, in this digital age, that's basically giving the keys of your house to a Fed agent. So given that these data elements are essentially what is used by most of us to establish our identities for services, which are increasingly becoming electronic, the fact that this data altogether is available in the public domain should be a cause for great concern for any Indian citizen. But unfortunately, given the way our news media works, this is apparently not an issue. I mean, it's there in the newspapers. I don't see Arnab Goswami blowing up about it on news channels. It's more important whether you would get 72 hooray in heaven. That's a more important, that's a more newsworthy article of information than the fact that apparently the personal data of pretty much every Indian citizen who took a COVID vaccine is now available online. So let's come to what the specific quote-unquote charge is. So the original charge was made by Saket Gokhale on Twitter. And what he said was that, and that part hasn't been denied by the government, is that on Telegram, there is a bot. For those of you, again, who don't know, Telegram is a secure messaging channel that has over the years kind of become a kind of underground channel for distributing banned content. So because of the fact that it uses encryption and is considered to be less amenable to government action than, let's say, WhatsApp. So a lot of quote-unquote fishy business is conducted over Telegram. And because it's encrypted, nobody really knows what goes on there. So on this Telegram channel, apparently there's a bot, which if you provide, I'm not sure exactly what you have to provide, maybe the telephone number of someone, you can get their personal data. So you can get the place where they got their vaccine, their Aadhaar or PAN card number, whatever identification they used during the vaccination process, and you get their address. So this is quite a big data breach of personally identifiable information. So this is happening and this has been alleged. Now, for those of you who listen to my podcast, you know that I've never been part of the Destroy Aadhaar gang or the Kagaz Nahi Dikhayenge gang. I think it's absolutely proper and right for a government to insist on a national ID. I mean, Americans have no problem with that for social security number. I don't understand why Indians have a problem with that. But while the government absolutely has the right to identify their citizens by a unique ID, and that you can't claim is an invasion of your privacy, the citizen can also and should expect that the government safeguard their data. And if your data is available on Telegram, then obviously that is not happening. And you expect the government to come clean. And what they have said, at least to me, somebody who knows a little bit about cybersecurity, really makes no sense. So I'll go over from what I read in the Indian newspapers. Again, there has been absolute silence as far as I know on television. And unfortunately, that's the big tragedy. Nobody really cares about data breach. So apparently, from what the government has said, is that this is an old breach. I don't even know what that means. I mean, who cares when it happened? It's an old breach. I don't even know what that means. But let's, as if that absolves the government of its responsibility. But let's look at So the government has said, this is again what the government has said, there's three ways in which you can access your data. So a user can access their own data to an OTP. A vaccinator can access, again, through their OTP. Okay, kind of makes sense. Then the third thing is what I don't understand. It says third-party applications can access personal level of data through OTP authentication. So they're basically saying that there is a programmatic access. So this is not a human being. This is an API call which is being made. And that is being done. The API is going through OTP authentication, which to me makes absolutely no sense. Because OTP authentication, OTP is part of something called multi-factor authentication. And multi-factor authentication is of human beings. So you basically authenticate yourself by something you know, which is a password, something you are, which is a biometric, and something you have, which is your phone, where you get your OTP. So again, the use of an OTP necessarily means that it's a human user who is being authenticated. So when you're saying that an API is an API call, so basically an application that is making a function call is being authenticated through OTP, it makes no sense. Now, what usually happens in terms of APIs is that APIs or any kind of, and I know this might be a little difficult for the general audience to understand, but bear with me. Just trust me when I say, if you're going to trust the government, just trust me when I say it doesn't happen through an OTP. What I believe they're trying to say is that there is an API secret. So when an API is set up, there's a server-side secret and a client-side secret. So what they're saying is there is a client-side secret which is provided, it's not an OTP, by the way, which is provided by the API, and it is going over, I'm guessing, a TLS channel, so you can't see what's going on. So an attacker can't see. So they're saying, how is it insecure? That's really what they're trying to say, but it's not an OTP. Now, the fact is, anybody who knows anything about application API security knows that this any kind of token, secret token, can always be stolen from the application. It can be stolen from the server end too, because you basically have a shared key. So the fact that you have an API call over OTP doesn't necessarily give any kind of security. So people will hear OTP is the security. No. OTP is security only as part of a multi-factor authentication flow for human users, not for services, not for programmatic calls. So this third thing that they said provides us with absolutely no assurance whatsoever. Another thing that I read was that the backend database was not directly accessing the APIs. Again, it doesn't matter if it's directly accessing the APIs or not, if there is obviously an indirect connection. So what this usually means, and I've seen this said many times, is basically the database is on its own private network. So that network is inaccessible from outside. But that doesn't mean at the network layer, something can be isolated. But at the higher levels of the protocol stack, and pardon me for this jargon, but at the higher level of the stack, they're obviously coupled. Somebody is obviously getting stuff from the database and writing to the database. So, and there is a link that goes to the API. So this not directly accessing API is indirectly accessing API. So that also provides us no assurance. Again, the fact is the government has not, in my mind, provided any kind of data, any kind of coherent, cogent scientific argument as to why nothing really bad has happened. So Indian Express, it says, is, and that's even more concerning, and this is, I read from Indian Express, is there is an API that does not take OTP. It is a trusted API which is whitelisted by COIN. So essentially what they're saying is there is an API call which doesn't even have an app secret. So what kind of security is this? And I understand that these words are, it's difficult to understand for the layperson. You know, somebody throws certain words at you, OTP, this, that, API, OTP, and you're like, okay, obviously everything is correct. But no, for me, I'm not getting it. And when The Wire, if for those of you who again follow my podcast, when The Wire did their expose, I said the same thing. It didn't make sense. And later on, I was proven to be right. What they said with the email, it just didn't make sense from a tech standpoint. Not politics, tech. This is science. So I personally have absolutely zero clarity as to what happened. But the fact is, the data is out there. That, and the government isn't saying the data isn't out there. They're just saying this is a previous breach, as if there is a statute of limitations. The real thing is that the Aadhaar details are coming up with phone number. So how did they get that? I don't understand. Are there two databases which have been leaked and they're essentially being joined through that phone number? So basically they have two breach databases and they're joining it and sending it out. So these, they're not one, it could be two breaches. The government, in my opinion, has to give a coherent, right now there is no coherence. They said that the ICS cert, Indian cert will come up with a report. This is like, when will they come up with a report? And what is being done with respect to the data that is already out there? People can't change that data. This is, and I'm, of course, this will keep on happening, unfortunately, in this country, because there's a total lack of cybersecurity culture across the board, in both in private industry as well as in government. And again, this is an anecdote which I love telling because I've experienced it myself years ago when I was trying to go to India as an academic. I interviewed at one of the Indian Institute of Management, and I was told that, you know, cybersecurity is not a management problem. So why don't you go and apply to the IITs? And obviously this is the problem, is that it is a management problem. It's not that tech isn't there. The real challenge isn't managing, is the management part of it. And you can see this in many places. And it's not just India, by the way. It happens in the US, but at least nobody in US academia, at least in the hallowed halls of US academia, nobody will tell you, you know, straight that, hey, management is not, the management of cybersecurity is not a problem. At least they recognize the fact. So for everybody, this should be a cause for concern. Not cause for concern with respect to the breach, of course, but with also with respect to the response. I mean, much of cybersecurity is trust. I mean, you hand over your data to Facebook. You basically keep all your personal information and your entire life in Gmail. There's obviously an element of trust. You think that Google knows what they're doing. And if you think that Google isn't, then you can move to somebody else. But with the government, you don't have that choice. It's a law. They will make you give your data. So given that you have no choice, the government has to be held to a higher standard of accountability with respect to data privacy and data protection. And it's obviously not happening. Their response, again, the government could say, here's what happened. And again, as long as in this day and age, to be honest, nobody expects that there will be no data breaches. That's also not reasonable. But you have to show that you've done due diligence. And from what I've seen, the response of the Indian government, the technical part of it, does not give me any kind of confidence that this is being seriously looked at. The whole thing is, oh, this is an old data breach. That's their words. Is itself stunning, shocking. This data was entrusted to you by Indian citizens. What do you mean by old? What do you mean? Is this like, are you going to blame this on Nehru too and say, yeah, Nehru leaked this? That I understand. If you say the old as in it was leaked during the time of Jawaharlal Nehru, I get it. But otherwise, I am shocked. I'm really shocked by this. Another thing I'm shocked is obviously is the lack of coverage that this is receiving in popular media. Who reads the newspapers nowadays? But it's understandable. This is not something which Arnab Goswami can really shout over. I can, you know, OTP though. I just don't know how he can spin it into something which would be popular, which would be able to rival a Big Boss in terms of eyeballs. So I guess that's why this, it's much easier to do that 72 hooray and you know, the other kind of things that we see on television. So not surprised, but you should be alarmed. The next thing that I, the other topic that I wanted to talk about was, you know, the The Sam Altman of OpenAI was in India recently. And in response to a question where somebody asked him specifically that, do you think an Indian startup can build OpenAI or something like that in $10 million? He said no. There was obviously outrage. People forgot the fact, or intentionally didn't mention the fact, that he didn't say that Indians can't build OpenAI. He never said that. He said it's not possible for anybody to build something in $10 million, because it's like saying, you know, can you do Avatar in one crore? You know, obviously you can't, right? So it's not a question of competence. It's just that you can't. The fewer computation costs of running it on the cloud itself will be more than $10 million. So that's really what he said. But the stunning and shocking thing, and I think this happens because we have been colonized so much, you know, 200 years of British colonization. The main thing about colonization is not just that they take your, you know, they take your national wealth. The real thing about colonization is they convince you that you're lousy, that you as a nation and you as a people are subhuman, that you're not intelligent enough. And we still feel so. Many Indians feel so. I was shocked to see that many people saying, yeah, of course, Indians can't do something as innovative as OpenAI. When does Indians do something? We're like, write code. We're like, first of all, writing code. People who say writing code are people who haven't written code, okay? Writing code is tough. And writing code is innovation. It is innovative. It requires, not everybody can do it. That's why the salaries are high. If everybody could do it, then it would not be such a high paying job. So writing code isn't that easy. And just coming to like basic research, the very foundational paper on which large language models stand, on which OpenAI is built, first author is an Indian guy from BITS. Okay. So the main thing, the narrative I was reading was, of course, Indian education system can't create people who have this level of innovation. And that's absolute bullshit, because it's not true. Indians dominate US universities. Indians dominate research labs. And these are not Indians born in the US. These are Indians who came through that quota, IIT, engineering college, that whole path. So the point is, they can't do it in India. Yes, there is a valid criticism of that. But it's not that the Indian education system does not produce people who make the fundamental contributions to science and technology. That is absolutely not true. One of the people I mentioned on Google, because I met him. He's no longer with us, but I was fortunate to meet him when I was an intern at Stanford University. It was Rajiv Motwani. And Rajiv Motwani is, in basically, his algorithms were used, I mean, not directly used, but he is a huge contributor to what Google is. And his contribution is to algorithms. I mean, when I was there, what I listened to was probabilistic algorithms. But he is like a god of computer science. He's from IIT Kanpur. So when people are saying Google is based, one of the people, again, research never happens based on one person. I mean, Sam Altman didn't create OpenAI. So something like this is created by people standing on the shoulders of others. So with apologies to Harbhajan Singh and Dhoni, and yes, any kind of success is built through teamwork. It's usually never one person who does it. Sure, somebody shows some level of vision, but it's usually a collaborative effort. It's never, but the point that I'm trying to say is, in this larger team, there is a disproportionate number of Indians. And another thing is, I've met many Indians. I've never met a brilliant guy. Well, first of all, I have in the US. I've met so many brilliant Indians here who've done fundamental. I mean, again, you wouldn't have heard of them. I mean, they would have done an algorithm. And this is a real example. This is an algorithm he did as part of his PhD thesis, which is used as part of the streaming platform that YouTube uses, okay, in terms of the optimization of the video streams. Because it's a small part of his thing, but it's an extremely important thing. And Indians are all over the place. And these people are like from India. They were not educated here. They came to do their PhD here. So there is definitely a question as to why we can't do it 100% in India. That definitely is. But to say that Indians or the Indian education system in terms of quota and IIT is a failure, That's not objectively true. And the reason why, I think, is that there's a saying that, you know, genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. And that's really what the Indian quota and IIT system teach you. It is perspiration. The people who are winnowed out by the whole IIT and engineering process are people with a high tolerance to pain, high tolerance to intellectual pain. They can keep at it. So it's not that they're geniuses, all of them. Some of them are geniuses. Definitely, Rajiv Motwani was a genius. But most of them have a kind of work ethic, because much of research, much of creating innovation is just keeping at it through nights, and just not giving up. So that skill is what I believe that our education system, in a kind of perverse way, but that's really what it teaches. It's not so much the problems from Iridov. Nobody's really applying it. It's the persistence that one had to display, had to beat other people to get there. That whole thing about elbows, that whole thing about standing up in a flight, the moment the flight lands, to kind of get ahead, even though you can't really get ahead. But that attitude is what basically propels Indian diaspora to produce original research, to produce original implementations. Again, I will give a lot of credit to people who write good code. I mean, ideas are ideas. Somebody has to write it. Somebody has to implement it. Somebody has to optimize it. Somebody has to make it run in such a way that you can make money from it. It's not a research prototype. It needs to be a product. There is innovation everywhere, and there are Indians everywhere. And this happens because of the Indian education system. Now, again, as I said, there's a larger question, which we can go into some other day, as to why we can't do this fully in India. Why is OpenAI an American company and not an Indian company? That's another question. But to say that the Indian education system does not produce like first level technical minds is plain objectively untrue. There are so many examples. So with that, thank you for listening, and I'll be back within a while. Thank you. Bye-bye.